Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. God bless you. God bless all. It's lovely to be with you by the internet. Hopefully our technical all works well. We never know. I'd like to read to you from a posting this morning. Parabhakti, the Lord is one. Someone wrote apologizing for momentarily falling for the guise of my being a human, just like me. But why should I not be human? It is the mind only that divides up this world and says, this is human and this other is divine. To break that barrier between human and divine is the greatest task we have before us. The dualistic perspective tells us that the human in me is not divine, and the divine we sometimes comprehend is not human. Our experience tends to bear this out. When you know the human self, you feel you are only a human, separate from God. When you are lifted up into God consciousness, it is something so completely different, better, higher, purer, that you cannot think of the human and the divine in the same category. But can a living branch ever say to the tree, I am not of you? If the branch were to think on it, its life must come from the tree, which has its source in the roots. In fact, there are one and the same organism. This is to say, each individual soul is rooted in the divine essence and can never be separated from that, or else it would cease to live. It would no longer be. It is the task of the mind to practice spiritual methods for realizing a fact that is already so. The mind is limited when it looks at the human and sees it as a separate thing. When the aspirant is devotedly focused on God and is consequently lifted up through his bhakti, aspiring for God vision, the devotee comes to experience God, sometimes within and sometimes without. The bhakta yearns for God with everything he or she has and strives to realize the object of his love and adoration. Through the bhakta's repeatedly touching the fabric of God's being, the mind is further purified, and now the state of God experience makes this world seem like a dream. In this uplifted state of jhana, the mind thinks of the world as a dream, an illusion that is not God. This jnani state says, transcendent God alone is real, all else is false. This high state of the jnana is tremendous, but it too is not our final destination. There is more to go. We proceed from there to get the fullest universal vision of God. By being immersed in the transcendent God experience, the mind is further purified and lifted into the state of Parabhakti, the supreme state of Purushottama, experiencing God within and without. The Parabhakti sees the transcendent state manifesting as the world, the body, and even the expression of the ego. All are expressions of a single, unified life. Now, God is seen operating in the highest consciousness and manifesting as everything created. In this supreme reality that is God, within and without and everywhere about. When established in this supreme reality, the soul has fulfilled its deepest purpose. Realizing beings exist as living manifestations of these great truths. Saints manifest a bhakta's great love for God and inspire that same love and dedication in others. Some of those saints become mystics of a higher order. They see the world is no longer real. It is not evil. It is not good. It simply stands in the way of perceiving transcendent spirit or is seen as unreal. Then there is the universally realized soul who knows that all is God and God is all, that the branch is a flawless manifestation of the tree, and the wave is a natural creation of the ocean. The mistake is when the branch or the wave thinks of itself as separate from the tree or ocean. This creates a false dichotomy that, in reality, can never be. Those on the upward path see the spiritual master and encounters his humanity. The aspirant can project onto the master his own ignorance, seeing the master as a human being only. In truth, the master is working through his humanity to help universalize the vision of those around him by being both human and divine. Mataji was disturbed by what she saw, in Papa's preference for some over others. She had not yet realized that God was working through Papa, and some he brought in close, others he kept more at a distance. This did not represent ignorance in Papa. He did not see God. He did not see God in all. It is simply how God was operating in his form. In fact, to be able to operate in this world, a fully realized master must show distinctions. It is the nature of creation. What is true for a fully realized master, that whether close or far, all are God for that one. In fact, as Master did with Mother, when he created an invisible barrier between he and Mother that lasted for 3 years, he was helping to purify and prepare her for the universal vision. As Mother said of Papa, "He loved me so much he was willing to hurt me." This can sound strange, even wrong, to one who has not experienced it, but it is true. Even as a surgeon is striving to heal us, even while cutting into the body. Let us love and strive as a bhakta, discriminate as dhyana, and most of all, let us attain the universal vision of the parabhakti and be free in the universe ultimate realization where God and human merge. Then, no matter where we look, whatever we do, there is only one, only God. And a quote from Mark 12:29, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." The three stages of this is as outlined by Papa Ram Dass of the Bhakti, the Yani, and the Parabhakti. And it is wonderful. It helps us to realize what stages we are to go through. It is said that Papa was Purushottama. Purushottama is that state where you perceive God as your all and all. And there is a chapter in the Bhagavad Gita where it is discussed what the Purushottama is. And this is Krishna speaking. "The Blessed Lord said, they, the wise, speak of an eternal Asvata tree, whose roots above and boughs beneath, whose leaves are Vedic hymns. He who understands this tree of life is a Veda knower." It's interesting that it says with roots above and boughs beneath, isn't it? Because we think of it as the opposite. But Sri Yukteswar helped us to understand this, that the spine and the brain are like a tree that is turned upside down. If you think of the brain and all of the nerve endings there as the roots of the tree, and then as you go down the spine is the trunk, and then all of the afferent and the efferent nerves that spread throughout the body are all the branches and ultimately all the leaves. And that Jesus talked about a great tree that provided shade for others and where the tree, the birds of heaven could nest. Now the birds of heaven our symbolic language, for those realizations that come to you directly from God. The shade that you get is the comforter, is the bliss that you get from God. It all happens within the tree, within your own being. And isn't that wonderful? We don't have to go someplace else. We don't have to wait for some other time in order to realize all of this. So this is a tremendous thing that we are being taught. And if we really take it to heart, we can realize this tremendous truth that is residing within us, each and every one of us. This is the time of a great awakening, whether it happens in a day, a month, a year, 10 years, 100 years. We tend to think in very small increments when it comes to time, because whatever we want right now. And so this is the time of the advent of the return of the Christ, the second coming. Only the clouds of heaven that the Christ will come from and has been coming from for selected souls down through time is the clouds right here at the Ajna when you close these two eyes and you see darkness in the beginning. And these are the dark clouds within you. And then the clouds begin to lighten. And suddenly there's a parting and there's a tremendous burst of sunlight that happens there. And you see this beautiful sun. Last week, I was giving blessing to someone, and as I was focused on my own ajna, I saw there a tremendous, brilliant light as I touched the ajna of this individual, and I knew that this light was transmitting itself. It's also an indication that that individual was receptive to that light. Sometimes the light appears very easily when such a blessing is given, and other times less so. And it's an indication of that individual and their openness and their development in seeing that light. So this is a tremendous thing, and this happens within the tree of your own being. But this chapter from the Gita is wonderful, and Master gives some commentary here. This enduring tree of life, mentioned in many scriptures of the world, including the Bible, is the human body and the human mind. In light of intuition, yogis behold the inverted tree of consciousness, ideational components of the causal body, within the tree of life force, the nadis of the astral body, channels of life energy. These two existing, interlocking within the inverted tree of the physical, cerebral, spinal, nervous system. So that's a mouthful. But what it means is that within your spine is the original causal world. Now, sometimes we think of the causal and have a hard time getting our hands around it, so to speak. But when you are drawn inside of yourself, either in deep thought or deep meditation, you have ideas that come across, and those ideas are part of the causal realm. Now they're just simply vague reflections of the true causal realm. When you enter into the true causal realm, it takes on a reality every bit as powerful and as wonderful as this physical reality, even more so. So you should not think of it as something that is really beyond you. It's already part of you. And that as when you get tremendous revelations that come from God, these come from the causal realm. And they perhaps come with light. They come with an unfoldment of ideas that is not arrived at through a reasoning logic process of the brain. Rather, it comes as a spontaneous unfoldment of truth and awareness. So this is a touch in with the causal realm. And then sometimes you will see or feel the electrical energy, so to speak. It is the life energy, the prana, that is behind every element of creation, even a rock. Jesus said, stop these disciples from singing out in praise of God, and the rocks themselves will ring out with that praise. And the ringing out of that praise is a sound of Om or Amen. And it's powerful. It's something that I listen to every single day. And many times it's so loud that it's difficult to bear. That was true when I was a child also. I would sit in my room and I would have this sound of silence, I called it. Later on, Simon and Garfunkel had a song with that name in it. But at the time, I didn't know. I just knew that this was the sound of silence, and sometimes it felt crushing to me. It was so powerful. And I had no idea what that was or why it was occurring to me. And so this is something that is a reality, and this Om vibration comes, and you feel this electrical force. Perhaps you feel it in your body, or you feel it in a tree. You can feel it in rocks. Everything has life. Everything has consciousness. Many times I have walked up to a tree and I've communed with that tree. And I have felt not only its life energy, but also its consciousness. You know, most trees, especially if they get to be very old, they're much, much older than we are. And we think of ourselves in quite arrogant ways. We think, oh, I've had this amount of intelligence, and I've lived on this earth for so long, and the mountains laugh at us. You think your lifetime is long? Think in terms of millennia, and then you will begin to grasp the age of a mountain. So let us not think in arrogant terms when it comes to nature, because nature has many, many things to teach us if we will but listen and attune ourselves to it. There is such great beauty in nature. You know, think of the experience that Jesus must have had when he was pointing out the lilies of the field, and he said that even Solomon, the greatest of kings, greatest of kingdoms, tremendous palaces, and so on, even Solomon, in all of his glory, was not arrayed as one of these. How he looked into that flower, how he saw divine life flowing through that flower. Beauty. You know, the astral worlds are extremely beautiful, most of them. There are some dark regions to it. And it's a wonderful thing, really, because in that astral realm, it's like that gets put with like. And so we are associating with like-minded souls. It's part of what's shocking about coming to this earth to many of us. Because we have existed in the astral realms or higher realms than that, we are used to being with kindred spirits. And when we come to this material plane, everybody of every realm mixes together freely. And so it can be shocking when you get with people of lower vibration. You're not sure what to make of it at first. But it helps us to ultimately universalize our vision. It's one of the things about incarnating here on this material earth that is so beneficial to our spiritual growth. In terms of the soul, it is a relatively short incarnation that comes by coming here. And I remember being born into this body and into a family and then into the world. And for my time and place, it was not an unusual incarnation at all. And like many, subject to so many different types of people. And some of them were bullies and some of them were kind and loving and every sort of person. Some were intelligent and others not so. And as I say, it is shocking when you get here. But it helps you to grow. My father could be quite a tough taskmaster. I sometimes thought that he thought raising three young boys was a little bit like having boot camp. And he was there to help inure us to difficulties and to toughen us up. And he wanted us to learn the lessons. He is a very dharmic soul himself. And many times I didn't understand and I didn't always appreciate how my father acted. But later on I saw it, and I saw that even though it was difficult for me at times, it was of a tremendous help because it helped me to mix with all peoples. It helped me as I worked through things come to see that God could work through anybody and everybody. That somebody who comes at you in a mood, somebody who's angry with you and so on, doesn't need to throw you off balance. In fact, just the opposite. You stand rooted in yourself, your great self. And sometimes people can come at you with psychic energy that's like a punch in the solar plexus or in the stomach. And what I learned was that not to protect myself in the sense of enshrouding myself, but rather that the great light of God within me is more powerful than outside experiences. And that when I encounter something that's difficult on the outside, I go within and I draw more powerfully upon God within me. More light, more power, more wisdom, more of everything. And that God trumps every other thing in this life. So you see, these are the kinds of lessons that we learn. And we all have it right within our spines. We have the ideational, the causal, and we have the astral. We don't have to go elsewhere to find these things. They're already existent inside of us. So Master is putting it right into the tree of life inside of us, both the astral and the causal. Then he continues that these two existing interlocked within the inverted tree of the physical cerebral spinal system. This triple tree has its roots of thought emanations, life force rays, and cranial nerves hanging upside down from the eternal cosmic consciousness above its ideational, astral, and physical spinal trunks, and its triple branches hang below. Now you can sense the truth of this when you are uplifted in consciousness and you feel a tingling vibration at the top of your head, and that tingling vibration actually goes out further out from your head. These are your roots. The phenomenal spheres were created by God as condensation of light. Projected out of the divine vibration, the earth came into being as an inert matter. In its inherent life, kept on thrusting its rays of life force outward. The rays became manifested in the form of vegetation and trees, with their extending shoots. The same basic patterns are repeated throughout nature. Like the plant kingdom, all forms of animate matter have a core of life whence branches extend to create and enliven the organism. Thus, after the Lord had enabled the earth to project trees, he fashioned human beings, his crowning creation, much like inverted trees. This correspondence is seen in the physical body's hair, roots of hair, cerebral spinal trunk, boughs of arms and legs and nerve branches extending throughout, distributing the sap of life. In a book on anatomy, look at the chart showing the nervous system in the human body. Turn the chart upside down and the brain below and the feet above, and you will see that man's form has similarity to an inverted tree with a trunk and many branches. Then turn the chart right and up, and you will see that the nervous system itself looks like an inverted tree with hair, brain, and spine above, and numerous branches of nerve shooting out below. As trees spring out from the soil beneath them, the human tree of thought, life force, and nerve grows invertedly down from the soil or the ground of cosmic consciousness. So at the top of your head, you are receiving cosmic consciousness. So they're very sensitive nerves. Now, for people who have not awakened, they have no idea of this. But for those who have awakened, you feel the sensitivity and the tingling vibration throughout those fine nerves. And as I say, it extends up beyond the physical brain at all, as well, because they are also roots of astral and roots of causal. And this cosmic consciousness, this cosmic energy, is all around us and is flowing to us. And when we open ourselves to it, we feel invigorated, we feel uplifted, we feel enlightened through the sensitivity of those nerves. In the human body, the physical tree of nerves is a gross manifestation of the astral tree of life energy within. The two trees of nerves and life force are condensed out of the tree of human consciousness, elemental ideas in the causal body, which in turn emanate from cosmic consciousness. Human hair is a result of condensation of astral rays. The tissues of the body itself are made up of atoms and life trunks. Some yogis do not cut their hair but keep it long to draw from the ether a greater quantity of cosmic rays, an effective but non-essential derivative yogic practice. The reason for Samson's having lost his superhuman strength when his hair was shorn by Delilah may well be that he practiced certain yogic exercises by which one's hair can be transformed into sensitive antenna to draw cosmic energy from the ether. The tree of life has three kinds of leaves or receptors through which the indwelling soul receives knowledge, the Vedic hymns of triune phenomenal creation. Sensations, life force, and thought perceptions, those are the three. The metaphor of leaves compared to Vedic hymns calls forth an image of sensitivity and vitality, the vibrant green leaves denoting life, whispering motion of hymns of knowledge, the rustle of the leaves. The leaves of the physical tree of life, for example, are the sensory organs in the epidermis and their corresponding centers in the brain, sensitive and full of life, receiving sensations and reporting the knowledge. The waving of these sensory leaves suggests the motion of sensation caused in the nerve centers through which we receive knowledge about the body and the world. Through the help of this sensory commotion, we see colors and forms, hear sounds, taste food, and so forth. When one perceives the proper integration of physical sensory stimuli with the inner tree of life force and consciousness in the astral and causal body, true knowledge of phenomenal world is produced. A man of self-realization tuning in with the infinite can see this mysterious tree of nerves, life force, and thought issuing out of cosmic consciousness. He thus becomes omniscient, a knower of the Vedas, that is, of all knowledge. So let us take this, because it is so important. As you meditate more deeply, your nerves become more sensitized. Now, it's not just your nerves in a physical sense, but it is your astral nerves, or the life force that is pulsating in and around you. This can make you extremely sensitive at times. There are times we go through in spiritual experiences where psychic phenomenon becomes very pronounced because we're opening up the life force on that astral basis. And so we are very sensitive to sights and sounds, both on a physical level as well as an astral. When I went into Babaji's cave, it was surrounded by granite. And it was such a comforting feeling because I realized that this stone was a kind of insulator that kept me insulated from the vibrations of the world, thought vibrations, vibrations of emotions and so on, not only by individuals, but by a collective world as well. And I could easily understand why yogis would retire to a cave such as this, because it insulated out not only sound in a physical sense, but also the vibrations of the world. And so you weren't constantly guarding yourself against it. Watch people who get into a tense situation, and many times they'll cross their arms right over their solar plexus. And that is because the solar plexus are this sensitive cluster of nerves in a physical sense that represents an astral cluster that is sensitive to psychic vibrations that come, and that is why you can get things down in your solar plexus. It can be a distinct knowing that this is a good place or a bad place. I remember one time I was walking in a park, and as I came up to an area that was an outdoor altar and has been used for many different purposes, but as I approached it, I suddenly felt this wall of dark psychic energy. And I knew that there had been a group that had been using this altar for black magic, and it had left its imprint. And I could work my way right along that wall, just like it was a physical wall. And of course, I didn't want much to do with it. I tried to penetrate into it, and it got more intense as I went, and so I left it alone. And I made my way around this wall of dark energy. And so sometimes you can come to an area and you get a very good feeling about it. You feel perhaps you're out in nature, and suddenly you're just in a spot. I remember coming into a place, and it was a circle of trees, and it was wonderful. There was a powerful, uplifting vibration that was in it, and it was like an outdoor cathedral that was right there. And I thought, oh, these great supporting columns that are inside of a temple, they're like trees. And they're all pointing upwards, and what they're trying to duplicate was some saint's experience of walking in the woods and having experience like I just had, where you had this column of trees around you, and they were pointing upwards, and the energy there was wonderful. Many times, cathedrals are built on sites that had been earlier places of worship before the Christian world came in, because not just because they're trying to plant their flag where somebody else's and replace theirs, but also because many times these are natural vortexes, you might say, for energy, positive energy, good energy, uplifting energy. Nature just has these sometimes spread out throughout because it's God's way of transmitting this energy. And then you get to a place where a saint has lived, and they will divinize such a place, and it will become a powerhouse of spiritual energy because they have lived there. They have practiced there, they have felt God there, and they've brought that God vibration into that area. And so you go to a place where a saint has been. Many times, saints on leaving the body, Mother had said that when a saint leaves the body, there is a projection of light that goes all out around the world. And many times, the place where they leave the body themselves, will be divinized, and so those bones will be treated as relics. I one time was at Anandashram, and they opened up in the Bhajan hall, and there were Papa's bones in a box there, a concrete or marble kind of box that they took the lid off of. And Papa had been so imbued with Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram that one of his femur bones, it looked like an om that was in the cracks of the bone there. Isn't that wonderful? And so you feel the power and the vibration of these holy sites. And they're wonderful. They're a blessing to this world. You too can divinize where you live. Perhaps it's a meditation blanket or a meditation chair, and you use it exclusively for your meditation. And every time you get it out, you feel the vibrations of it. And through your investment, so to speak, of meditating upon that blanket day after day and year after year, it takes on that vibration, and you don't use it for anybody, for anything else, and you don't let other people touch it. And it builds that vibration. And so when you're having a tough day or a particularly tough time, you sit down on your meditation blanket, and it supports you because it has that vibration in it. You have your meditation beads. You have those things that you keep as sacred. And they build a vibration, and then that vibration can go out, and it can help fill the house. Now, houses are not just kept strictly for temples. They are also the places where we live. But we can be a blessing to all those who live in the house because we keep our minds on God. We feel that vibration of God. And when you experience God, you don't have to try to do it. That vibration simply goes out from you. And it's a blessing to yourself. It's a blessing to your home. It's a blessing to your community. And when it's powerful, it becomes a blessing to this whole world. In your mind's eye, as you experience God and you feel God, then you can see this whole world filled with that vibration of God, that light. And it's easy to do. And you are a blessing to this whole world then. Isn't that a magnificent thing? If I can spit it out. And it is. It is. So we should not underestimate the power and the blessings that our spiritual practice brings. We don't always see it in a minute or a day. But over time, we go through changes, and sometimes we don't see the changes very well because we're living with ourselves, and we're oftentimes more focused on what we're trying to overcome rather than what we have overcome. So it's useful every now and then to look back over your life and to see where you used to be, see things that used to bother you. See your life in ways that you didn't realize God as greatly as you do now, or you didn't aspire for God as greatly as you do now. You didn't understand things as clearly as you do now. And you will realize that really you have made progress. If you're climbing a mountain and you're really struggling to get up that mountain, every step can be painful. You just have to concentrate on taking one step after another. But when you do that, you gradually climb the mountain. And it's not until you take a break and you turn around and you look out and you see the vista and you realize how far you have come up. Because sometimes we can get discouraged, it's useful to do that now and then. Don't take a very long break. You don't want that place of rest to turn into eternal rest. Just a moment. And take that encouragement and keep going. Now, this is not to excuse unfocused minds. Our whole sadhana, our whole spiritual practice, is learning how to focus our minds. Learning how to keep our mind on God in thick and thin, in good times and bad. It's very interesting as I talk to devotees that some people have a more difficult time to keep their minds on God when times are good. And other people have a more difficult time when times are difficult. So it's interesting. We're all built differently. But the principle is the same for us all. Keep your mind on God. Learn to develop that bhakti, that love for God, where you aspire for God alone. Then God will pick you up. And He will put you into that causal state where you will see that God transcendent is real, the real reality. And that God imminent in this world, it feels like an illusion. It feels like a dream. It feels like you're walking in a dream. Nothing around it feels quite real to you. But your internal experiences are all powerful. And this is good. This is a sign that you are developing and going to the next step. But there are some who stay there. And they say the world is unreal and God transcendent alone is real. But they haven't realized the full truth yet. The full truth is that God is both transcendent and immanent. That is, God is in spirit, and you feel uplifted in spirit beyond time and space and form and thought and all of it. And you're in pure spiritual consciousness, purely with God. And then you open these two eyes, and you look out, and you see God immanent. Now, in the beginning, we may see that in a deity, we may see it in a guru, we may see it in a saint, that we feel God so greatly in them. And that's a beginning, but we need to spread out from there. Sometimes it's easier to see it in a stranger than it is to see it in a loved one. And that's because of our attachment. We have little attachment to how a stranger should be. We have a lot of attachment to how a loved one should be. And we have to let go of that. Let go of the attachment. God is what God is. And if He's manifesting as a particular form, rather than seeing it as our business to change someone else, we change ourselves. We say, how can I transcend this situation? How can I realize God, even within this situation? And we really go to work on it. We don't just give it lip service, as Mother would say. We really focus on it. Say, I want to realize God right here, right now. As Sister Gyanamata used to say, don't change my circumstances, God. Change me. Change me. God is existent in this moment, in this place. You don't need another. And in that surrender to God, if He sees that it is for your highest good that the situation be changed, He'll arrange it. Other than that, your job is to keep your mind on Him and let Him take care of all the rest of it. You can't imagine, or perhaps you can, what a burden this lifts from you. No longer are you responsible for this world and changing this world. You're responsible only for yourself. You can let the world be. Now, we still have our preferences, but we surrender those preferences. We give them to God. We pay attention to those things that separate us from God, create a dichotomy. And those are the things we really go to work on. Other thoughts don't hold the same kind of emotional spark for us. They're not loaded subjects. But there are some that are very loaded for us. That's where our work belongs. That's where we need to focus. So that one day, we close these eyes, we go and we experience God so greatly in pure spirit, beyond thought, beyond form, beyond it all. Then we open these two eyes, and we see that it is the same God that we experience deep within, that is manifesting as His entire creation, including all people and places. It is a transcendent vision that we are seeking for, and it is also immanent. So we can practice, it's part of our spiritual practice, is seeing God as all and all. Remind yourself, this too is God. God is manifesting as this individual. Don't personalize it, because that roots you into the drama. and keeps you bound and keeps you in ignorance. And it is you yourself who are doing it to yourself. So take responsibility for yourself, for your life. And you can change it. You can deeply attune it with God and Gurus. And then you become a blazing light. And you truly see the Purushottama, that which is one, one eternal being, one existence, one life, one love, one intelligence that is streaming throughout all creation and you. Now where you are free, you're eternally free. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to light.